Today is August 24th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover the Pentagon's declared punishment doctrine against Iran's Revolutionary Guard following four sequenced attacks on American forces in Jordan, the Strait of Hormuz fuel crisis that has pushed the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to its lowest level since 1982, and Russia's deepening mobilization dilemma as Ukraine's homemade Flamingo missile reshapes the strike calculus on both sides. Start with a number that should stop anyone tracking this conflict. Two service members killed, one still missing, four medically evacuated after Iranian ballistic missiles and drones struck Muwafaq Salty Air Base on July 17th. That strike was not isolated. It was the fourth in a five-day sequence, escalating from a residential and billeting strike that wounded five personnel, to an attack on a base housing Black Hawk helicopters, to the ballistic missile barrage that sent roughly 20 troops scrambling for bunkers. An Iranian parliamentarian had publicly threatened that exact base before the missiles landed. That is not coincidence. That is signaling. CENTCOM's response, detailed in its July 18th statement, is where the real doctrinal shift happens. Washington launched its eighth consecutive night of strikes that evening, running from 6 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Eastern, and explicitly framed the campaign around two goals: degrading Iran's capacity to threaten shipping through the Strait of Hormuz, and swiftly punishing the specific IRGC units responsible for the Jordan attacks. The strategic calculus here is almost identical to the logic behind the Soleimani strike back in January 2020, targeted retribution against named units rather than a declared war, which lets Washington claim proportionality while still escalating. CENTCOM's own language, that American forces were killed in action while defending against Iranian strikes, is doing legal and political work. It locks in a defensive posture publicly, even as the campaign expands. Statements from Senator Tom Cotton and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth function the same way: public commitments that make walking this back politically expensive. More importantly, this cycle marked the combat debut of the roughly 30,000-pound GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrator against Fordow's enrichment facility, a weapon capable of punching through an estimated 200 feet of rock, while the smaller GBU-72, the so-called advanced 5K penetrator, reportedly hit underground missile storage near Hormuz. Here's the constraint nobody's pricing in. The United States holds only about two dozen of the larger penetrators, replenished through a single, non-competitive Boeing contract. That scarcity becomes a hard ceiling on the next escalation rung, which is the publicly named target of Iran's Pickaxe Mountain facility. When a sitting president names a target before striking it, that's unusual enough to be its own signal, independent of whether the strike ever happens. Building on that, look at where U.S. air power actually sits right now. Mounting pressure on Bahrain's Shia-majority population, plus friction with the UAE and Qatar, has pushed CENTCOM to consolidate its most sensitive assets, F-15E, Strike Eagles, EA-18G Growlers, westward into Jordan. That's the same base now absorbing the heaviest IRGC pressure. The shifting geography of power here shows a single point of failure. America's regional posture is narrowing exactly as the threat against that narrow footprint intensifies. And Jordan's King Abdullah is caught in the middle, balancing the U.S. security relationship against a domestic population with real Palestinian sympathies, while Iranian officials are openly calling for Jordanian citizens to seize the base themselves. This is a strike ceasefire re-escalation pattern that traces back through the 12-day war roughly a year ago, and further back through the Tower 22 attack in January 2024. It keeps repeating because neither side has found an exit ramp. While that campaign unfolds, the economic exhaust is arriving in energy markets, and it's arriving somewhere unexpected. According to CSIS's Energy Shots analysts, the Hormuz crisis has stopped being a crude availability problem and become a refined product shortage. The diesel crack spread hit a record $100 a barrel this week, a marker in analyst Kevin Book's words of acute scarcity. The picture that chart from the IEA's oil market report is showing: global observed petroleum inventories fell roughly 410 million barrels between February and July of 2025, on track to fall further to around 600 million barrels by year's end. EIA data show an even steeper drawdown: 4.2 million barrels a day in the second quarter, 3.8 million in the third, adding up to roughly 700 million barrels lost over 6 months. Global refinery throughput is running 4.1 million barrels a day below normal, driven by Ukrainian drone strikes idling Russian refineries, damage to Middle East production, and disrupted Asian supply routes. The takeaway is that roughly 1.7 million barrels a day of demand simply isn't being met. The strategic calculus here is that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has effectively said the quiet part out loud. Rising prices are the deliberate cost of substituting sanctions for further kinetic engagement with Iran. That's the trade-off Washington is choosing. Meanwhile, the strategic petroleum reserve has fallen to 293.4 million barrels, the lowest since 1982, with a further drop to around 243 million barrels projected. More importantly, the flow rate, how fast oil can actually be released, has dropped from 1.2 million barrels a day to roughly 600,000, against an IEA estimated ceiling of 750,000 barrels a day. In plain terms, the reserve is hitting an operational speed limit before it hits a physical one. There's also a credibility gap worth flagging. The administration claims roughly 10 million barrels a day are being successfully escorted through Hormuz. The independent tracker Vortexa puts the real number at 4 to 7 million. That's close to a twofold discrepancy, and it helps explain why markets haven't rallied harder despite the Navy's claimed success. Traders don't fully believe the escort numbers. This entire operation is explicitly modeled on Operation Earnest Will, the late 1980s tanker war escort mission, and on the roughly 18-month Red Sea response to Houthi attacks. Record U.S. diesel exports, now 1.7 million barrels a day, about 500,000 above the five-year average, are stabilizing global markets even as they drain domestic stocks, 5% below the five-year range nationally, 21% below in New England specifically. Watch that regional gap intensify into October as harvest demand collides with already depleted stocks. Now to the third pressure point, and it's arguably the most consequential for the medium term. Russia captured just 37 square kilometers of Ukrainian territory in July of this year, a 12-fold decline from the 455 square kilometers it took the same month a year earlier, despite fielding roughly 700,000 troops across a front line stretching more than 1,000 kilometers. Ukraine's general staff puts Russian losses at 42,860 personnel for July alone, plus 2,016 artillery systems and over 54,000 drones shot down, up from 6,000 a year prior. That is the war's bloodiest month on record, and it's landing on Vladimir Putin's desk at the exact moment he's been avoiding a general mobilization decision for 4 years running. The strain shows up domestically, too. Fuel rationing is back in the Moscow region. More than 50 territories have limited fuel sales, and a government commission has authorized emergency situations ministry personnel to use force at gas stations. That's not a country managing a war comfortably. At the same time, Ukraine's indigenous strike capability is maturing fast. The domestically built Firepoint FP-5 Flamingo cruise missile costs roughly $500,000 per unit, against roughly $2 million for a Tomahawk, yet carries a warhead of 1,000 to 1,150 kilograms over a reported 3,000 kilometers. Wreckage analysis circulating on Telegram suggests newer Flamingos are now using a British-sourced engine. Put simply, Kyiv is closing the cost and range gap on deep strike, just as Moscow's manpower math gets harder to sustain. And that combination is exactly what tends to precede either a negotiated pause or a much sharper escalation. The signal to watch over the next 48 hours sits at Muwafaq Salty. If CENTCOM extends its strike tempo past a ninth consecutive night, or if Jordanian officials make any public statement about the base's status, that tells us whether King Abdullah's balancing act is holding or breaking, and that single data point will move oil markets faster than anything coming out of the Treasury this week. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.